Now that they know and believe that they can break the barriers that they finally identified, it's with this belief, born of proximity to successful doctors at the seminar, that the timid onlookers are now able to step up to the plate and take on the high-risk practice-building projects, everything from associates to marketing to clinic space expansion. If these two growth barriers, capacity denial and default faithlessness, weren't enough to keep the majority of clinics stuck up to their axles in productive stagnation, you eventually run into barrier number three, practicism denial. I've spent a little time on this topic in previous recordings, so I don't want to belabor it too long, but I will say that although the majority of my clients know what patients want from the practice, what they don't know is that they're not giving it to them. Patients are so nice in front of the doctor, you know, out of respect, that there's a tendency to leave the doctor believing that they're hitting the consumerism bullseye every time, when in fact it's just the opposite. This is why we insist that the first step in practice evaluation, and we can't do anything when working with the doctor if we cannot agree on this one point of evaluation, and that is to acknowledge that direct patient referrals are the measure of a practice, plain and simple. If you're having to buy your patients, if you're spending a fortune on marketing every month and you've been doing that for 8 years, you're doing something wrong. In other words, if we're not getting referrals, we're out of touch with our patients. Just like with the other two blockages, practicism is the natural default setting inside the human brain, certainly inside the doctor's brain. Practicism is a simple tendency to let the practice rules and policies drift in the direction that favors the doctor and staff, and at the patient's expense. Practicism would cover everything from closing the clinic during the hours that are popular with patients to raising fees just because the price of your rent went up. You know, refusing to participate in insurance plans would be another example. Not that that's always a mistake to refuse to participate in these plans, but it certainly is a step in the direction of practicism as seen by patients. And yes, consumerism is just the opposite. It's running the practice by the patient's rules, not ours. I realize that you have to strike a balance, but if the balance point you've settled on isn't getting you a steady flow of 40-plus direct patient referrals per month, your balance is off-center. I saw a newsletter that circulated among legal offices recently that, in my opinion, took practicism to a whole new level. It talked about the need to train their clients to not be so hard to work with. It advocated the re-education of patients to make it easier for the lawyer and the law office to work with them. It listed a long column of things patients could change or do to make them easier to work with. When you finished the list, you weren't sure why anyone would need a lawyer if the client could follow all the guidelines listed in that newsletter. It had the client doing most of their own research on the case, overcoming the urge to call the law office and ask how the case was progressing, paying in advance for every imaginable cost that might be incurred in the case. In short, this attorney was burned out and had come to the conclusion that clients were the problem. This is a little tip for you. When you start seeing patients as the problem in your practice, you are well down the way to the slippery slope to practicism. Patients are never the problem. Weak practice systems, burned out staff and doctors are the problem. What do I mean by weak practice systems? If your systems aren't such that you can anticipate every naughty thing a patient might do or say, and act preemptively to counteract it and doing it without offending the patients, you're going to find that most people really are good patients. It was interesting to read this article because it really epitomized practicism. I mentioned that this attorney was more than likely in the late stages of burnout. You know, stop and think about it. What it must be like to have practice systems so weak or, you know, even non-existent that patients or clients run over you at every turn. It's starting to look like to me the chaotic offices are the ones most vulnerable to managed care. See, they need the insurance subsidy. They need it in the form of reimbursement financially, as well as access to a large number of patients willing to put up with poor service in return for, you know, low out-of-pocket. See, the sad part of the story is that the doctor who stays inside the heavily discounted plans for as long as possible, it's the one who's finally going to burn out from dealing with the deliberate insurance company hassle. See, the ones who leave the plans and attempt to field the same mediocre team and systems that survive the subsidized healthcare world of managed care, they're going to be the ones who suffer patient chaos burnout. Believe me when I say that patients paying the major portion of their own health care costs aren't going to put up with someone telling them that they have to learn how to be a better patient. For the best part of my consulting career, I've worked with doctors threatening to quit this profession because of stress. If you've ever been in a country where people routinely die of starvation, you eventually have a relief worker explain to you that it isn't hunger that kills people, especially children. It's the diseases that result from inadequate nutrition. In practice, the stress diseases that eventually take a doctor out of practice, in my opinion, have consumerism denial at the root of their suffering. Let me explain. The practice that fails to impress consumers must eventually turn to marketing and promotion to keep the bills paid. It's a nasty job because you have to constantly change the ad to appeal to the changing whims of your marketplace. Ad works for a while, then it quits working. And sometimes you got to try three or four different campaigns to make it work. And every one of those campaigns can cost you $5,000 or $10,000 that you can't afford to lose. So you find yourself a slave in the end to the yellow page Nazi, the guy that shows up and tells you that if you don't continually expand the size of your ad, the competitor you have down the street is going to get all of your patients. And you know, when you're kind of hungry, that starts to sound believable. In some of the practices I work with, the yellow page guy is literally a financial full partner with the doctor. They're taking home as much as the doctor is out of the deal. They always tell you that there's another book you need to be in because, you know, your area falls right between two books and you need to be in clinics as well as doctors. So that puts you in four places. Then you got to get, you know, the color. Then you want to fight for the cover, the inside cover, the jacket, the back. I mean, it never seems to stop. If you can't generate referrals, it never stops. See, in the end, because of your inability to really achieve cost-effective advertising, you're finally forced to raise your prices to offset the added marketing cost. And it's almost ironic because many of the practices that have their prices driven up by the cost of their advertising were really suffering from high-priced consumer violations to begin with. In other words, their overpricing drove them into advertising, and you can see a spiral that's coming out of this that finally alienates the doctor completely from their consumer or their patient. With the thinning profit margins that are now coming out of your failed but expensive marketing campaign, you find yourself getting tight and testy with your team. Soon they're filing off down the street to work for your competitor, who seems to be booked for months in advance without spending a dime on advertising. Now you have staff training and turnover fatigue to add to your marketing stress and expense. With the new parade of untrained staff, your patients are now feeling even more uncomfortable with the quality of their care. This is the doctor who's starting to feel the desperation that makes you gladly sign up for insurance plans that ruthlessly exploit the providers unfortunate enough to get caught in their trap. I've seen offices hire and train 16 different staff members for the same position in a 12-month period of time. You want to talk about stress. Between the stresses of constant staff turnover, high-priced, marginally effective ad campaigns, intentionally inflicted insurance hassles by insurance companies, and the antagonistic spirit that starts to fester between doctor and patients, it's not long before this doctor starts to look at their pathetic bottom line net profit and say, this just isn't worth the stress. It's like the children I described in Africa that appear to be dying of disease. It's really the underlying malnutrition is the problem. For the doctor, the stress that drove him or her out of practice was really just the symptom. The underlying cause was the failure to acknowledge the patient or consumer as the new master of our practices now that insurance companies are leaving the scene. As I said earlier, pleasing patients doesn't come easy or naturally. Yes, understanding what the patient wants comes easily, but really facing the fact that we're not giving it to them, that's the part that goes against our natures. I found that there are six critical points of consumerism that will make all the difference in your ability to inspire patients to refer others to the practice. They are as follows. And some of you have heard me describe these on a videotape. Well, there's an additional one, and there's a few changes. Cost, convenience, control, comfort, compassion, and clinical and interpersonal competence. All right, let's go through these briefly. First, cost. This isn't your fees. This is how tightly you bundle your care and make the patient feel like they have to buy the whole enchilada. The doctor that does that typically has very, very few referrals. Second, convenience, the ability to get in right away and during the times I want to get in. It isn't just about getting in right now. It's getting in at the time of the day that is convenient for me. We call this hyper-convenience. Next, control. Who's running the show? That is in case presentation. Does the patient feel that they're being pushed or confused? Push means you're being too strong. Confused means you're not really making it clear. On a recent tape, we talked about waffle words, that where the doctor fails to create urgency. You got to get this just right. Next, comfort. Everything in the practice makes the patient feel like you're taking care of them. Compassion is where the patient is made to feel like they are more important than money. Clinical and interpersonal competence are very important. Now, you might be asking, well, how does this affect referrals? Patients really aren't that big on clinical competence. Well, first of all, they are very big on interpersonal competence. This means how you're relating with patients. And it's all about, in my opinion here, the staff. If staff perceive you as clinically or interpersonally incompetent, they will put up an attitude or an emotional screen on the front desk on the phone coming in. I've had staff tell me that when patients call, they wince at the thought of trying to get them in the door where they know the doctor will offend them with an abrasive personality or with clinical incompetence. So if your staff are not fully sold on you, I can promise you that the person answering that telephone will communicate that to them. So these are the six crucial points of consumerism. Now, we're not going to really go into these in great depth. That's, you know, for another topic. In fact, I'm just in the process of finishing an audio set that teaches the how-tos of identifying and correcting, you know, these six areas. The set's probably going to be entitled How to Add 50 New Referrals Per Month to Any Practice Without Spending a Dime. So, the mystery of blocked practices is now solved, at least from the point of understanding, you know, the complex inner working of these three notorious growth barriers. Now you have to take this information and your personal acknowledgement that have come from learning it and make some changes. Unfortunately, it's usually in the area of high-risk improvements to the practice. So why am I having you look at the high-risk areas early on? Because these are the ones that you're least likely to be open to. In other words, they've been pushed to the sidelines for a long time as you pursued low-risk solutions. You know the ones I'm talking about, like getting twice the work out of existing staff, everybody just trying a little harder, waiting to fill the slow times before investing in more peak demand capacity. Before you do make any drastic moves, like adding associates, paid advertising, or 2,000 more square feet to the clinic, make sure that you have great staff and that they are on fire for bonus. This is when bold, high-risk moves pay huge dividends. I personally believe that sustainable, high-profit increases in the practice all start with your team. Nothing great happens without a great team. I've watched doctors try to diagnose their own capacity blockages, deliver high-grade consumerism, and do it without the support of a well-trained, highly motivated team, and I can tell you, the outcome isn't pretty. It's the high road to practice burnout, in my opinion. I really feel like we're just starting to see some of the fallout from managed care in our industry. I read about 8 years ago a Wall Street Journal article about physicians checking into stress clinics because of their problems with managed care. We're just starting to see some of this hit our clients. The power of managed care to wreck a life and a practice are in direct proportion to your failure to connect with your patients in these six categories that I just outlined. Believe me, the doctors who finally are taken captive by the deeply discounted insurance plans won't even come close to providing the type of care sought by the people in your communities. They're going to have to put up with long waits. I was in a practice the other day where the average patient waited 4 hours to see the doctor. It was a capitated program where 21 doctors were under one roof and profit margins were just non-existent. It was a nightmare for doctor and even greater nightmare for the poor patients involved. So there it is. If you really want to go to the next level of practice production and you want to do it soon, look for your sticking points among the three conceptual growth barriers that I've described: capacity denial, default faithlessness, and practicism denial. You may want to listen to this recording with your entire team. If they're as good as they're supposed to be, they'll have constructive feedback for you on how your practice is currently being negatively affected by these three growth barriers. Thanks for listening.